Hello, and welcome to the Ordinary People's Theatre Podcast. I'm your host, Emma Sheehan. Sit back, relax, and enjoy our comedy mixtapes, mini soaps, and short stories. Super smart tales with a dark twist, with the occasional classic tale thrown in for good measure. We upload here on the first Monday of the month, and for more information about us, go to ordinarypeoplestheatre.co.uk. Enjoy the show. By Emma Sheehan. Part 2. Michelle and Tim settled into married life well, setting up home in Tim's late mother Barbara's large house. Michelle wasted no time in ripping out Barbara's art studio in the basement and installing a hot tub. Tim tried to protest, but Michelle suggested he set up a lovely memorial to Barbara's artwork in the loft and that he should spend a lot of time up there cataloguing and curating her work as a legacy. Tim fell for it, and so that gave Michelle lots of time in the hot tub with her best friend Yasmin. Tim got a bit lonely sometimes up in the loft, and so invited over his best mate and best man, Lee. Lee wasn't sure exactly what the hell Barbara's paintings were meant to be, as they just looked like a lot of daubs to him, but was happy to help Tim and have a bit of a chat.
"Mate, I feel we're getting boring," he said one night.
"Boring?" replied Tim.
"Yeah. Since you've been married, mate, you're well under the thumb."
"I know what you mean, Lee. We need to get them out of the hot tub and get in there with a couple of beers or something," replied Tim.
"No, we'd still be bored. We need to think of something," said Lee.
"Something?" replied Tim.
"Yeah, something."
"Like what?"
"Well, something that will save you mowing the lawn or putting up shelves or walking round malls at the weekend. That sort of something, Tim."
"You're right, mate," said Tim. "We need a hobby."
"Yeah, a hobby," shouted Lee.
"What though?" They thought for a while and rejected the pub and darts and gym as legitimate hobbies. They took a break and Tim went off to get some teas and a packet of hobnobs. By the time he came back to the loft, Lee was grinning and doing a little dance.
"I've got it, mate," he crowed. "I've smashed it. I've blown it out of the water."
"Eh?" said Tim. "What? What have you smashed and blown?"
"I've nailed it, mate,"
Lee said through a face full of hobnobs.
"What?"
squeaked Tim, his voice rising.
"Bike, mate."
"What? What bike?"
said Tim.
"A bike, mate. A motorbike. We are going to get a motorbike."
"What? A motorbike? What?"
squealed Tim.
"Shh. Keep your voice down, Tim. You don't want your Michelle hearing. We, my old son, are going to go halves on a motorbike. Sod the gym, sod the pub. We need to get the wind in our hair."
"Wow! Can we? Can we really?"
whispered Tim. "Mum wouldn't have allowed that, and now Michelle won't. But can we, Lee?"
"Yep. Let me know your budget. I'll get online. This time next week, Timmy, we could be in Southend."
Michelle was not looking best pleased as Tim came back in the kitchen after seeing Lee off. "What are you smirking about, Tim? And what was all that whispering with Lee as he left?"
"Whispering, darling? Nothing, my sweet. You look all lovely and glowy after your hot tub. Shall I make us a cup of tea?"
"No. I'm getting another bottle of wine from the fridge. Yasmin's still here."
"Still here?"
"Yes, Tim. My friend is still here. Do you have a problem with that?"
No, of course not, my sweet," said Tim, getting nervous.
Michelle felt a rage rising. Just what the hell was Tim getting at? She'd noticed that lately. A little comment here, a small dig there, but it all added up. It was getting oppressive. It was getting like that North Korea around here. She'd read that this is often how it starts, a chipping away at the self-esteem, constant scrutiny and controlling. Yes, Tim was displaying all the signs of a controlling husband, and Michelle was not pleased. "These are all the classic signs, Tim."
"Signs of what?"
he said, confused. "Bullying, controlling me, isolating me from my friends."
Isolating you from your friends? Yasmin has been here 9 times this week, darling.
Michelle turned with a bottle of wine and slammed the door on the way back to the hot tub.
Tim returned to the loft and awaited news from Lee.
He listened to the radio as he waited, but it was only the news, droning on about the latest on a lurid diamond robbery, so he was happy to turn it off when he saw that Lee had sent him a picture of a silver motorbike and the message, "Only 3 grand, mate. We're going for a test drive on Saturday. Look out, South End."
Bob leaned back in the battered armchair in the garage and put a bandage on his perfectly fine hand as he listened to the news on the radio. More reports of Plod being totally stumped and clueless about a massive diamond heist. Bob let out a little chuckle and mused, policing wasn't what it was, probably due to the cutbacks. He switched it off as he saw 2 gormless-looking blokes crossing the yard and opening his garage door.
"All right, mate, come to see the bike."
"Come in, fellas, here she is. Beauty, eh?"
He pointed to a silver motorbike in the corner of the garage.
"Want to take her out for a spin?"
"Yep, sure do," said Tim excitedly.
"Got any lids?"
"Lids?" said Lee.
"Lids! Helmets, mate! It's the law!"
Tim and Lee couldn't believe how silly they'd been choosing the bike, even applying for licences, but forgetting about actual basics like motorbike helmets.
"There you go! Borrow a couple of mine!"
Bob picked up a red helmet from a bench that had a skull and crossbone sticker on it with his bandaged hand, and as he passed it to Tim, it dropped on the floor.
"Sorry, lads, gammy hand."
As Tim reached to retrieve the helmet, Bob said,
"Actually, lads, couldn't do us a favour, could you? Pick up that old doll, put that wrench in it, will you? Me hand's throbbing, and I want to shoot off quick once you've gone."
Tim bent and picked up the old doll and put the wrench in it. He also put the motorbike helmet on.
"Here you go, mate."
Lee took another helmet from Bob and approached the bike.
"Here, here, hold up, lads. Gish your phone. I'll snap you for the Insta and the Twitter and that."
Lee gave Bob his phone and the pair posed by the bike with cheesy grins doing the thumbs up sign. 30 minutes later, they roared back to Bob's garage, whooping and high-fiving.
"What do you think, lads? We got a deal."
"We sure have, mate. What a beauty. We picked up some lids on the way back too, so we can take her home now," said Lee.
"Well, let's get the business out of the way and you can get out on the open road. Just gonna need a couple of autographs and dosh and we're done. Stick the light on over there, would you, mate, so we can read these forms?"
10 minutes later, the exchange documents were signed and the money was handed over and Tim and Lee got off on the road to Southend. Bob donned a pair of gloves and plucked a single £20 note from the stuffed envelope that Lee had given him and left it on the counter. He then pushed the armchair to some waste ground around the back of the yard and set fire to it, chucked on the bandage from his hand and chucked the gloves in as well as the flames got going. Jumping into his Land Rover, Bob was just in time to catch the latest news. He called up a pal as he joined the motorway to Gatwick.
"Smooth as butter, mate. Nope. Complete pair of numbnut Egypts. Collected myself a load of dabs, a couple of autographs and a pair of patsies. I've got 3 grand in cash for a decent bit of lunch. Sweet, eh? Like a kipper. Anyway, I better get off. Got another call to make, mate. Laters."
Bob ended the call and placed another one anonymously to Crime Stoppers. Michelle was in the kitchen stocking up the fridge with wine she'd bought for her and Yasmin for the hot tub tonight. The radio was on, and she shook her head as the excited newsreader announced that an anonymous tip had led police to a dawn raid on a deserted garage where they'd collected fingerprints, documents and photographic evidence from social media and were near to making an arrest for the daring diamond smash and grab.
Diamonds, eh? All she got was a lousy turquoise ring.
Yeah, she got her sapphire, her Bobby Dazzler, but mostly through her own hard work. And weren't husbands supposed to get wives one of those eternity ring things? Weren't they supposed to be diamonds? Tim hadn't made any mention of it, so what was going on there? Perhaps the apple wasn't falling very far from the tree. Perhaps Tim was destined to grow more and more like Barbara every day. Oh dear, there was no way that would be happening. Not on her watch. She settled herself into the hot tub and texted her personal trainer she'd met at the gym today. It really was time she started making some time for herself. Relaxing with Yasmin in the hot tub more, getting in shape at the gym. She'd read an article on it only the other day. She needed to stop putting others first and practice some self-care. Tim crashed in through the door at that moment and called out to her in a really high squeaky voice that was a dead giveaway that he was hiding something. As she spotted him in the kitchen before he dashed up to the loft with a bulky rucksack, she guessed that wasn't an eternity ring, and she might as well stay in the hot tub now and let him get his own dinner if he's going to play silly beggars. Tim made his way downstairs a few minutes later after he'd safely stashed his motorbike helmet and leather jacket behind some of his mum's paintings, where Michelle would never snoop. When he was surprised to hear tyres crunching at speed on the gravel drive and the slam of a car door and approaching footsteps. He wasn't sure why, but he was suddenly alarmed. He opened the door to find a tall man in a brown leather jacket who looked every inch what he was. The man spoke.
"Are you Timothy Patterson?"
"Yes. Why? Can I help? Tim faltered as the man boomed over the top of him.
"Timothy Patterson, I'm arresting you on suspicion of robbery. You do not have to say anything, but anything you do say will be used in evidence. Do you understand?"
Tim froze. He'd heard about that at moments of great stress that this can happen, but he hadn't believed it. He felt like he was watching a movie at the same time as being in one. What on earth was happening? What? What? Eh? Was all he could burble out.
"Get your coat, sunshine. You're nicked, you scumbag."
Tim called for Michelle as he was handcuffed and dragged up the driveway, which was filled with police cars with their blue lights flashing in the tea time gloom. He was glad his mum wasn't around to see this. She would have done her nut if she saw all that gravel churned up like that. But then he wished she was here, as her charging up the drive would have terrified this lot. Michelle didn't hear any of this, as she put on an old George Michael CD she'd found in the basement. At least Barbara had some taste, and she was neck deep in bubbles, oblivious to the unfolding drama on her doorstep. Tim was bundled into the back of a police car and driven at speed to the police station, where he was stripped of all his clothing and sat in a small windowless room in a paper suit for what seemed like an age before the man appeared back and introduced himself as Detective Inspector Mike Logan. He was scooped up by some burly bearded policemen and shoved into a hard plastic seat in another windowless room with a table and a TV. D.I. Logan lolled in the chair opposite him as if he'd been watching too much Sweeney or Life on Mars and switched on a tape recorder which made a long high beep. And then Logan said their names and then fell silent for a few minutes. Tim stared expectantly and was just about to speak when, without making eye contact, Logan said,
"Are you or are you not the co-owner of this bike, sir? For the tape, I'm showing Exhibit 3A.
D.I. Logan put down a photo of the new silver motorbike on the table between them. Tim recognised his new bike at once and wondered why the police had a photograph of it.
"Yes, but I told you, I..."
"The same motorbike that was used in the Hatton Garden Diamond Smash a fortnight ago." Logan spoke over the top of him once more.
"The what? Do you mean the diamond robbery that's been all over the news? No, it can't be. That's mine and Lee's bike."
D.I. Logan then stopped abruptly and picked up a motorbike helmet from the floor in a plastic bag and put it on the table. It was the red one from Bob's garage with the skull and crossbone sticker on it.
D.I. Logan said, "For the tape, I'm showing the suspect Exhibit 3B. Do you recognise this Mr. Patterson?"
"No, but, well, yes, it's the one from the garage. It's not mine, though," replied Tim.
D.I. Logan frowned and said,
"Let me get this straight. No, but yes. Is one of those answers true? Can you explain then, sir, why traces of your DNA and hair were found inside this helmet?"
"No, they weren't. They're not. They can't be. It's not mine."
Tim was really starting to panic now. He couldn't quite believe what he was hearing. It was like something from TV. He recognised the phrases as ones the cops always used when someone was in big trouble, and now they were saying them to him. What a silly mix-up. He tried to keep his voice as low as possible, as Michelle always called it his guilty voice when he started squeaking. Although he wasn't quite sure why.
I did try it on for a photo.
D.I. Logan continued.
"Oh, so it's not been on your head, but you tried it on for a photo entitled Heading Out on the Road on This Baby on both you and Mr. Lee Reynolds' Instagram and Twitter accounts. Would that be this photo? For the tape, I am showing the suspect Exhibit 3C.
Logan put down another photo on the table. Tim was scared to look. He was even more scared to speak, as his voice was now so high he sounded like a toddler on helium. He got a single word out. "Yes." When he recognised the photo he'd posed for in Bob's garage, where they looked like a couple of dorks with their thumbs in the air.
"Yes, not only have you in fact put this on your head while it was photographed, it appears to be the very one worn by the smash and grab raiders on motorbikes from the diamond heist of June the 22nd in Hatton Garden."
Logan then picked up a remote control, pointed it at a TV screen in the small interview room, and the pair watched the footage from CCTV that had been endlessly on the news for the last fortnight. It showed surprisingly clear images of two men on a motorbike pulling onto the pavement outside a jewellery shop and smashing right through the door with a wrench and emerging minutes later with a large holdall. Tim had never paid very close attention to it on the news, but his heart fell to the floor as he saw the motorbike was a silver one and the man on the pillion had a red helmet with a little black sticker on the front that was caught on other footage from inside the shop and was shown to be a skull and crossbones. After a few seconds, Logan pointed the remote again at the screen and it went black and they turned to face each other. Tim squeaked,
"That's not me!"
The policeman was starting to sound a little irritated now.
"So let me get this straight, Mr. Patterson, and very quickly, as I'm due at a stag do in Eastbourne in 2 hours. The bike that you co-own and the motorbike helmet that you tried on are all caught on CCTV at the scene of the crime, but they're not yours."
Tim said, "No, it's not me and Lee. We only got that bike last week. You can check the paperwork."
"The paperwork's fake. That motorbike is stolen. The only fingerprints on the documents are the owner's and you and Mr. Lee Reynolds. Brinks Matt you ain't, are ya?"
Tim squeaked, "Matt? Who's Matt? What about Bob?"
"Who's Bob?" said D.R. Logan. "Another gang member?"
"No, no, Bob from the garage, where we bought the bike."
"We've no record of any Bob. That garage belongs to a little old lady. She reported a break-in. And what do you think we found there?"
Tim squeaked, I don't know, how would I?"
And then he paused as the realisation sank in. "Oh, the helmet?"
"Correct," said D.R. Logan, "amongst all the other evidence."
"No, no," Tim squeaked. "It's not me and Lee. Someone took that photo of me and Lee, didn't they? That was Bob. Check Lee's phone too. He rang Bob to buy the bike from online."
"Don't you start telling us how to do our job. We've traced that number. It's a Chinese takeaway who said they don't know why they got a few calls about a motorbike and they've got no idea what's going on. So we assume you put that ad to get the shot of that bike, put the number up wrongly, fake the date you allegedly bought on the documents to cover your tracks. You probably just did one of those timed selfies on your phone that was on a shelf in a garage or something to get that photo. The game is well and truly up, sunshine. I would like to get my shirt ironed for tonight's stag do, so let's wrap this up sharpish. I'll put it to you that you and your associate Lee Reynolds pulled off one of the biggest diamond robberies this country has ever seen. It was also one of the dumbest ever witnessed by this force. You were..."
He stopped mid-sentence and picked up his notes and read from them.
"Caught on CCTV, smashing your way into a jeweller's, piling some of the world's most expensive diamonds into a holdall, the said holdall later being found covered in your fingerprints. You committed this robbery on a stolen bike that you forged the papers for, very kindly putting your real names and addresses on. You travelled to said garage, where Mr. Reynolds kindly left his fingerprints all over the place. The light switch on a garage, which was covered in maps and photos of the jewellers, and his fingerprints on an envelope, and the £20 note. Yours were found on the wrench and a holder we believe was used in this robbery, all handily captured on a gormless photo on social media for all the world and all the police forces in the world to see. Ronnie Biggs you ain't, are ya?"
"It's not us. It's not Ronnie. Who's Ronnie? It's Bob. The whole thing. It's Bob."
"Let's just knock Bob on the head once and for all, shall we? We know there's no Bob. We've spoken to your wife and..."
Tim moved from squeaking to wailing.
"No! Don't! Oh, she'll go mad. I'll get in so much trouble. Don't tell Michelle."
"You're already in so much trouble, you bloody idiot." She wasn't surprised at all. She thought something was wrong.
Tim stopped the wailing, taking in what had just been said about Michelle. "She... what?
No, she never,"
he stammered.
"Is she here? What she said? What have you said to her?"
D.R. Logan went on.
"She said you've been..."
He read from the notebook this time again.
"Lying to her on several occasions, that you spent time out of the house not answering text, you told her conflicting stories of your whereabouts, you hid a motorbike helmet and a jacket away from her with no explanation, and that she was very concerned for her safety."
He put down the notebook.
"She...
what?
No, her safety? Michelle? What does she mean? My wife is totally safe. I'm not the actual diamond robber, you know. To be honest, my wife makes me a little bit nervous sometimes."
D.R. Logan again spoke over him and cut him off. "Nasty, very nasty. You've questioned, belittled and tried to isolate your wife. Lovely woman like that. Shocking."
"No, no, I'd never do that," squeaked Tim. "What's she talking about? Can I see her? Can I speak to her?"
D.R. Logan now roared. "No, you cannot. You're a scumbag, Patterson. A scumbag and a crap crook. Robbing diamonds, breaking into little old ladies' garages, thieving motorbikes, terrifying your wife, handsome woman like that, afraid of a tow rag like you.
She's not. I'm innocent.
Tim was wailing again.
The policeman was silent for a few seconds and then said quietly, Lucky she's got good friends around her. Like him, in the tracksuit.
Who in a tracksuit?
Tim asked quietly. A bloke in a tracksuit, round your house, with your missus, with his shoes off.
What tracksuit? Why's he got his shoes off?
Tim's head began to spin. He knew they had the wrong man, so probably they were talking about the wrong wife. They must be at the wrong house. Tim and Michelle didn't know anyone in a tracksuit, and who would be at his house? Shoeless.
What the hell is going on?
No idea, Patterson. I'm popping round with some flowers for Michelle tomorrow, so I'll be sure to ask her.
Flowers? Tracksuit? Who's in a tracksuit? Why are you popping round with flowers?
Tim felt like he was going to faint now.
A tracksuit and flowers? Why was this copper popping round with flowers for Michelle? Is this the new face of caring, sharing policing? This was spiralling out of control.
We've really got a crack on here now, me laddo. What else can you tell me about this bike?
Absolutely nothing, officer. Me and Lee decided we want a hobby, so we went halves on a motorbike that we found on sale for online. We bought it from a bloke named Bob. It's just a hobby, just to start our own little motorbike gang at the weekends.
Logan interrupted again and started to write something down. Oh, this is gangland crime as well now, is it?
No, it was Lee. Well, he said he just joked, you know, we could have a secret gang to escape the wife now and again, just go to Southend once in a while.
So, like a gang, but not a gang, not gangland. Am I writing that down correctly, Mr. Patterson?
Tim squeaked.
So you are saying on the record that it is just you and Mr. Lee Reynolds in this gang, be it ever so tiny?
Tim just nodded.
Right, OK, the pair of you are saying you're not part of any larger gang. We have established there is no Bob, so you are carrying the can for the whole lot yourselves. Now we're getting somewhere. Let's move on. Now where's the stuff?
What stuff? Whispered Tim. What is this copper talking about now?
D.I. Logan slumped in his chair and let out a theatrical sigh. £4.9 million worth of diamonds in your very tiny brain!
Michelle and Yasmin decided it may well be time to get out of the hot tub as they'd polished off the second bottle of wine and they had to go to the off-licence for more supplies. As they dressed, Michelle looked like she was going to cry and Yasmin went to comfort her.
Thanks, Yas. But you know what I am now, don't you? I'm one of those gangsters, Moles. Although these wives of gangsters are meant to have amazing wardrobes and cars in there, aren't they, though?
Yasmin agreed and added that she thought that they also had holiday homes in the Maldives, too.
That's a good point, Yas.
Perhaps Tim has been hiding one of those from me too. My solicitor is looking to see if I can get any compensation or anything. I'm as much a victim of Tim as those jewellers are, you know. What about me in all this?
And it's defo your Tim and Dopey? Asked Yasmin.
I would have thought they were a bit thick to pull it off. Although, of course, they did get caught 5 minutes later, so yes, it could well be them.
It's defo them, Yasmin. They have been charged. Bang to rights or whatever they call it. The bike was in Lee's Nan's garage. They even stuck a photo of Tim with a crash helmet on at the gang's hideout all over social media. But do you know what the worst thing is, Yaz? Tim is meant to be a criminal mastermind. So what was my first crap engagement ring all about? And where the hell are those bloody diamonds? Selfish. This is all so selfish.
That is a very good point, Michelle, Yasmin added.
Yes. It does all sound very selfish.
Michelle nodded.
Yep, this is just like his mother, Barbara.
As Yasmin headed out the door to make her way to the off-licence, a wiry man in a tracksuit with his hair piled up in a bun was about to ring the bell. Yasmin waved at him and left, and Michelle invited the man inside.
And how's my favourite client?
He asked in a slow, liquid voice.
I feel so good, Lance. Very relaxed in body, replied Michelle. I really need a personal trainer, Lance, and you've been a godsend. I feel amazing. But I'm really emotionally drained after all that's been going on round here. I was thinking of relaxing in the hot tub if you'd care to join me.
I'd love to, Michelle. It's been so great to train you. I mean it. You really are my favourite client. You know that, don't you?
I've got you a little present because you've been working so hard. Lance then pulled out a little cube from his tracksuit pocket and Michelle's heart lurched. She recognised the box by its colour before she'd even seen the name. Tiffany's! Michelle took the box, anxious not to grab, and pulled out a shining stone on a long silver chain. Oh, you're almost giving me little compliments, Lance. Thank you. It's beautiful. A real Bobby Dazzler. Put it on for me in the hot tub, will you? Bobby Dazzler was written and narrated by Emma Sheehan for the Ordinary People's Theatre.